Our first reading this afternoon is from Genesis, chapter 2, verses 1 through 3, and can be found on page 2 in the Church Bible. That's Genesis, chapter 2, verses 1 through 3, on page 2. Beginning in verse 1. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the seventh day, God finished his work that he had done. And he rested on the seventh day from all his work that he had done. So God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it God rested from all his work that he had done in creation. Our second reading this afternoon is from Hebrews, chapter 4, verses 1 through 11, and can be found on page 1205 in the Church Bibles. That's Hebrews, chapter 4, verses 1 through 11, on page 1205 in the Church Bible. Beginning in verse 1. Therefore, while the promise of entering his rest still stands, let us fear lest any of you should seem to have failed to reach it. For good news came to us just as to them. But the message they heard did not benefit them, because they were not united by faith with those who listened. For we who have believed enter that rest, as he has said, as I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest, although his words were finished from the foundation of the world. For he has somewhere spoken of the seventh day in this way, and God rested on the seventh day from all his works. And again in this passage he said, they shall not enter my rest. Since therefore it remains for some to enter it, and those who formerly received the good news failed to enter because of disobedience, again he appoints a certain day, today, saying through David so long afterwards, in the words already quoted, today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts. For if Joshua had given them rest, God would not have spoken of another day later on. So then, there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For whoever has entered God's rest has also rested from his works, as God did from his. Let us, therefore, strive to enter that rest, so that no one may fall by the same sort of disobedience.
Laura, thank you very much for reading for us. So what's it all about, this life thing? Why are we all here? What is it that you and I are made for? Questions like that assail us once in a while. Maybe the crisis points of life, or maybe the opposite, when life is going so well. We lie there awake, middle of the night, and ask ourselves, what's the point? What's the point of it all? Satisfying answers prove elusive for many. Matthew Paris, writing in this week's Spectator magazine, observes, human beings ceaselessly struggle to find meaning and purpose in life. So is there meaning? Is there purpose to our lives? Many would claim, of course, we can't ask that question. Life is just the result of random mutations, so we can't ask what it's for. But even if there is a reason, a purpose behind it all, can we know what it is? Who can tell us? Well, this week is our third instalment of our series in the opening chapters of Genesis. Do turn back to chapter 2 of Genesis if you've turned on. And first, we were given the answer to the question, where does it all come from? in chapter 1. Last week we considered who am I as a human being, and today it's this issue of where is it all heading? We've reached day 7 of the creation account at the beginning here of chapter 2. There's an outline on the sheets we've given as you came in of where we're heading, and we'll see three things that we learn from what we see here. And the first is that the heavens and earth were finished. So the first sentence in the Bible, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And after all we saw in the creative activity of days 1 to 6, we reach chapter 2, verse 1. Thus, the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. It's a slight statement of the obvious after all we've seen in chapter 1. But the author of Genesis, as ever, wants to show us what this tells us about God. Well, first, it shows us that creation is God's work. Three times we're told that in chapter 2, verses 2 and 3. Let me read that for us. And on the seventh day, God finished his work that he had done. And he rested on the seventh day from all his work that he had done. So God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it God rested from all his work that he had done in creation. It's labouring the point, isn't it? It underlines what was so plain in the previous chapter. But have we got the message? As we look around and are struck again by the beauty, the scale, the intricacy of this world around us, what are we to be thinking? God did it. When we realise again the richness of human life, the variety and diversity of peoples of the earth, again, evidence of God at work. And maybe particularly as though any achievement of our own. Why is that? Only because God gave us the gifts and the abilities, and not to mention the life and the breath to do those things. So credit where credit's due. To God alone. We see the heavens and the earth finished. Praise God and thank him. So it's God's work. And in particular, God finishes his creation work. So again, the Bible begins in the beginning. God started something. And sure enough, he finishes it. Again, this is repeated in verse 1 and verse 2 of chapter 2. God completed what he set out to do. And it turns out that the author of Genesis structures his whole account to underline this for us. When I was at a theological college, I was made to study Hebrew. I can't claim to have made huge progress, but I did work out how to count Hebrew words. And Genesis 1 is an amazing chapter once you're able to do that, which doesn't take very much. The first sentence of the chapter, 7 words. You'll see over that chapter, God is mentioned quite a few times. If you choose to count, it's 35 times, which is a multiple of 7, obviously. And then God's speech, mentioned 14 times, 7 times 2. Then that verdict, God saw that it was good. Well, you've guessed it, 7 times. The number 7 is highly important. It's the number of points for a converted try. But no more of that right now. Sorry. More importantly, even than that, in the Bible, in Genesis, this number 7, we begin to see, becomes associated with completion, perfection. Everything just as God intended it to be. And that is the heavens and the earth. Job done according to an amazing plan. But of course, the same can't be said of our efforts. Many of us come to church and have walked past the building site over there, the pinnacle. You say building site, work has slowed to a standstill, really. All you can see is the central core of the first 7 stories. Will it be finished? Who knows? Or maybe you came from that direction. The gherkin's pretty impressive. Initially, it was meant to be twice the height. But plans change. Things don't quite work out as originally intended. And of course, I'm sure it's the same in our personal lives. Well, it's now the end of February. So how many of those New Year's resolutions are still in place? How many monuments do you have around your house to uncompleted or botched DIY projects that you are going to get done? Our lives are full, aren't they, of good intentions that don't materialise. How many promises have we made that we failed to keep? But Genesis is showing us none of that with our God. God has what it takes to see things through to completion. God doesn't run out of cash or energy or time or life. He doesn't flag. Once God has set his mind to something, he'll do it. It won't change. He'll do it properly. Because God is a finisher. He gets things done. And why do we need to know that? Well, you read on a few chapters in Genesis, and God takes one man and called Abram and says this to him: I will make of you a great nation. In you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. A little later, he took Abram, aging by now, married to a barren wife, Sarah. He took them outside and said to Abram, look up. Look towards the heavens. Number the stars if you can. So shall your offspring be. Those are astonishing promises for God to make. But we've already seen in Genesis, God is a finisher. So if God has said it, he will do it. However improbable it might have seemed to Abraham or to us. And it matters, doesn't it, very much for you and I today. Because if we're Christians, we are staking our lives on what God has told us. We're staking our eternity on whether God can do what he says. Will there be life beyond death? Is it worth it for me to keep following and serving Jesus this week when much easier alternatives are presenting themselves? We sang earlier that God will wipe away every tear from our eyes. But is it true? Well, Genesis 1 and 2 are showing us, yes, it is, because what God says, he does. Our God finishes all he sets out to do. So, the heavens and the earth finished. But that all happened on days 1 to 6. Look how the first chapter ended, verse 31. And God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening and there was morning, the sixth day. Now, how does that sound to you? That's a concluding sounding sentence, isn't it, if ever we've heard one. The chapters were put into the book of Genesis centuries later. And it's obvious the later editor thought that's quite a good place to round off chapter, isn't it? The end of chapter one. But of course, 6 days are not all there is to it. In fact, far from it. Because second, our verses tell us that God rested on the seventh day. God rested on the seventh day. So again, those opening words of Genesis, in the beginning, immediately imply we're going somewhere, but where? And then again, as we read Genesis 1, we see a God working in such an ordered way, everything according to his plan, his design. But again, we could ask, but what was that working towards? Well, that one proposal comes from what we saw last week. Do you remember? Humanity has that very privileged and special place in God's universe. And having seen that, many people assume, well, that's where it ends, on day 6. But what we've seen already in Genesis won't let us do that. Do you remember those sevens? So surely we can't stop the creation account after 6 days. It's building towards the seventh. It's incomplete without it. And then we see the seventh day in verses 1 to 3 is mentioned 3 times, unlike the other days. And keep counting. If you look at each sentence in which the seventh day is named, there are, again, you've guessed it, 7 words. It's as if to say, this is where we are to look. This is the focus. This is where it's all heading, the seventh day. So we naturally ask, so what happens on this seventh day? Well, verse 2 tells us, God rested on the seventh day from all his work that he had done. Into verse 3, we're told the same thing again. God rested from all his work. Now that word rest, I wonder what it brings to mind for you. We slip off the shoes, put the feet up, relax our aching limbs, maybe shut the eyes, and recharge the batteries. But we know, don't we, that can't possibly be what it means for God. And after all, Jesus in the New Testament tells us the Father continues to work. He has the small matter of sustaining the universe. So why say that God rested? Well, the word here, rested, if you like, can also mean to cease, to stop. So it's almost emphasizing again that resting is what happens when the job is done, when the task is completed. So this is, if you like, the rest of achievement, not of inactivity. Here is what God has been working towards. He's completed the work, so he's now enjoying the rest that follows. And do you remember days 1 to 6? Each of them ended with an evening and then a morning. But not here on the seventh. This day is ongoing. And it turns out, if we look carefully, God does actually do something on the seventh day. Look again at verse 3. So God blessed the seventh day and made it holy. Now, holy means to be set apart, belonging to God in a very special way. Back in chapter 1, God said an awful lot about the creation, but he didn't say about any of it that it was holy. In fact, Genesis 2 verse 3 is therefore the first mention of holy in the whole Bible, and it doesn't come again in the book of Genesis. So our attention is drawn to it. It's a special day, the day God has chosen for him, set apart. And then we're told, verse 3, God blessed this day. Again, something very special he didn't do for any of the other days. So reading it, surely we're meant to be thinking, if there's a day to be in, that's the one. I'd love to share in this seventh day. Because after all we've learnt about this great God, the evidence we can see of the wonder of his plan and how he's working it out, he tells us, and this is what it's all for, this seventh day. It's blessed, it's made holy. We're meant to read it and think, I'd love to be there. Here is where creation is heading. This is what we were made for, being with our Creator God, sharing in his rest, enjoying relationship with him. But then there's a surprise, isn't there, as you read the seventh day? No mention of humanity. Where are we? Do we get to share in this rest of God or not? If this is what creation is for, is there a place for us? We're bound to want to know more. We're spurred to read on. And before we know it, disaster. Chapter 3, Adam and Eve sin. They are shut out from the garden. God puts angels and a flaming sword across the entrance. Keep out. Access, if you like, to the garden, to God's rest, to the tree of life, denied to humanity. It's a disaster. And reading that, learning of that, that we can't get into the garden, we can't share in this rest of God, the whole purpose he made the world. Well, it should be unbearable for us to hear that. But of course, all around us today, people simply aren't bothered. Not in the slightest. If we were to talk about what we were made for, sharing in God's rest, well, they wouldn't be fussed at all. If they had to accept this Genesis account of creation, they'd verily happily take one that ends at the end of day 6. Cut out the seventh day, leave God out of the picture, we'll get on with life. Thank you very much. But as we've seen, that is to lose the whole point of why everything was created in the first place. And what's more, if we do that, it's not as if we or anyone else would live for nothing. Because it seems we're all hardwired to search for meaning, for purpose in life. And if we won't look to day 7 and to God as we should, well, we'll have to find something, if you like, in day 6. Something in the creation itself for us to live for. And that's what we see, isn't it, all around us. It could be the relationship or the family. It could be for fun. Live life to the full, to enjoy the world God has made. It could be to give ourselves for a cause in this world, maybe to look after the world itself. All those good things, all of them God-given, but not what we were made for. So as we read this, we should be asking ourselves, what is it actually that I am living for? Where is it that I find meaning and purpose? And if it's something or someone, if you like, in day 6, well, it'll end in tears. Everyone tells us cutting out the 7th day simply doesn't matter all that much. We can get on with it. But it would be like saying of a plane, well, we could do without one of the wings. It's ridiculous. Disaster. We were made for God. That's how we were created, to share in this rest. Nothing else will satisfy or fulfill ultimately. Adam and Eve tried that route, ended up outside the garden. And that's where we are today, if you like. That's where our world is, cut off from the presence of God. Which leads us to ask, have we lost, therefore, the opportunity to enjoy God's rest forever? And of course, the wonderful news is the Bible is an end at Genesis 3. Expulsion from the garden is a disaster, but it's not the end of the story for the human race. And one way of, if you like, summing up the rest of the Bible is the story of how God will share his rest with those made in his image. Let's see how he does that. Rest appears in a very well-known place, in the Ten Commandments. So do turn on to Exodus 20 on page 73. The language of Genesis 1 and 2 is picked up in the 4th of the Ten Commandments. Exodus 20, and we'll begin to read at verse 8. God commands his people at Sinai, "Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the 7th day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, your male servant or your female servant, or your livestock, or the sojourner who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested the 7th day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy." So God is telling his people, those he's just rescued out of Egypt, that they are to follow the pattern established at creation. Work for 6 days, but on the 7th to stop, to rest. Which teaches us, doesn't it, that of all the ways that we might be tempted to live for this world, to stay in day 6, the one particularly highlighted for us is work. Now, we saw last week there is a place for work, for productive work, whether paid or unpaid, whether in the home or out of the home. God's plan is that if we are able, well, we will provide for ourselves, our families, and others. So work is not something to be negative about. After all, haven't we? We've just seen God is a worker. But rather than giving work its rightful place in God's plan, that can become the one thing that we live for. That's where we think we will get that meaning and purpose and satisfaction. And you don't need me to tell you, the consequences of that attitude in our society are evident. People are obsessed with work, even if it costs them their marriages, even if it harms their family life. They lose their health. They have no time for others. Work can consume us. It can become our God. Then we'll serve it at all costs. We'll cut corners, tell a fib or two, trample on others. It just doesn't matter, because work is what matters above all. The one true God, the God of day seven, doesn't get a look in. But then, as with anything in day six, we should ask, well, does it work? Does it satisfy? Does it deliver on all we are investing in it? So think of the focus of our daily efforts. It may be with the family in the home, the work outside the home, or the studies at school and college. If that is everything, well, where are they going to end up? What if they simply don't turn out as we've hoped and dreamed? What then? Or even, what if they are successful? What then? We should ask the question, where is it all heading? And Genesis will tell us very simply, it's a dead end. Literally. Do you remember Adam and Eve? They chose to live for something except for God, and they will surely die. So work may give us lots of money. We'll have to leave it behind. We may achieve success, but others simply won't be as impressed as we hope they will be. And then, of course, give it a couple of centuries, and quite frankly, who will care? Living for work might appear normal in this world that is focused on the sixth day with no time for God. But why do we look to such a world rather than our Creator to find out what it is we should be living for? And so then, in giving his people the Ten Commandments like this in Exodus, God in his kindness is establishing for his people a weekly reminder there is more to life than work. So the Israelites, you can imagine, if they were getting caught up in their daily activities, beginning to look to them for security or their hopes or ambitions, well, then once a week, this day would point them back to God, remind them of what he alone can give. So the people of Israel were to remember God's rest. So we might ask, well, did they then experience it? Did they enjoy what Genesis 2 speaks of? Well, we're going to keep going through our very quick Bible overview. Deuteronomy chapter 12, which is a couple of books on page 188. Deuteronomy chapter 12. Now here we have the same people. They've left Sinai. They've been on a journey. They are about to enter the promised land. Deuteronomy 12, and we'll just begin to read at verse 8, where Moses tells them, "You shall not do according to all that we are doing here today, everyone doing what is right in his own eyes. For you have not as yet come to the rest and to the inheritance that the Lord your God is giving you." So do you notice the rest is described as an inheritance, a gift from God for his people, but it's future. We could look in Deuteronomy elsewhere, and we are seeing that the life in the land they're about to enter is described in terms reminiscent of the Garden of Eden. But notice, although they already observed the weekly Sabbath week by week, it was pointing forward still to the rest that was yet to come. Well, in due course, the people entered this land God had promised. But then it turns out when they get there that even then, that is not the ultimate rest God had promised. We were told that in our reading earlier from Hebrews. It told us that true rest is yet to come. Well, life in the land for Israel was great. But in the end, it was only pointing forward to an even better, the ultimate rest that God had in store. So the people had much in the land, but they showed themselves unworthy of it. They decided, if you like, to keep living in days 1 to 6. They turned away from God. He judged them. They were thrown out of the land. Genesis 3 all over again. In time, they did end up back in the land, but it was obvious this is not the rest that God had promised. That part of the Bible is depressing in many ways. It seems that hope has gone. It seems experiencing this day seven rest is out of reach. Until, that is, this invitation is given. Come to me, all who are labor and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. Those, of course, are Jesus' words in Matthew 11. And they show us that rest is to be found in Jesus Christ. Rest is to be found in Jesus Christ. So how do we get to share in that rest of God for which we were made? The promised land of Canaan was a sneak preview of the new heavens and the new earth, where this rest will be experienced in full. If you look in the book of Revelation at the end of the Bible, the new creation is described in language which is familiar because it's like the Garden of Genesis in many ways. The tree of life will be there, accessible, and we will there enjoy that rest with God for which we were made. But as we finish studying Genesis, our very quick Bible overview has shown us two things we need to realize about this new creation rest. For a start, the new creation is God's work. We should have learned that lesson already. This creation is all God's work. The same is true of the new creation. Do you remember the promised land for Israel? It was described as a gift, an inheritance. And likewise, the new creation is a gift, an inheritance for God's people. The point is, we don't deserve it. We've all lived, haven't we, as if day six was what it was all about. So we don't contribute to getting into the new creation. We don't produce it. We don't earn it. There's only one way to get that rest. Jesus says, come to me. It's his to give, and the offer is open to everyone because it doesn't depend on anything we do. Remember, Jesus said, all who labour under heavy laden. Well, if that's you, come, enjoy the rest that Jesus gives. So it's all God's work, and also God finishes his new creation work. So let's again learn the lesson. Creation shows us God is a finisher. Do you remember the moment that Jesus died? He cried out, it is finished. God promised that he would open up a way into the garden again, and he has. Jesus' death does it all. And then with Jesus' resurrection, he has now entered that rest of God. He has blazed a trail, opened up the way. We can follow him into God's rest. The work is done. That's why Jesus can say, come to me and I will give you rest. It's ready. Coming to Jesus, we have that. We do enjoy that rest already. But now, of course, we are looking forward to experiencing it in full. Much of the struggles of life now show we are not there yet. But the point is, we can be sure that we will experience it. Our future is secure because God is a finisher. The effects of Jesus' death and resurrection will be fully worked out. The new creation in all its fullness will be ushered in, and at last we and all God's people will be there. So our original question, where is creation heading? What is the meaning and purpose of it all? Simply, God's rest. It was there in the original creation on the seventh day, and despite our sin, God's purpose of having people to share with him that rest have not been thwarted. Jesus came and he tells us that eternal life, the life that satisfies, life to the full, is to know the one true Creator God and to know him, the one God sent. That's the life that Jesus will give to any who come to him. And as we do come to Jesus and know this life, we experience what we were made for. We become the people we were created to be. We find rest. Let's pray as we finish. come to me, said Jesus, and I will give you rest. Our Father, we praise you that you made us to share in your rest, to enjoy relationship with you. Thank you that although each of us has chosen to seek satisfaction elsewhere, you sent your Son to die and rise again so that in him we would find rest. So help us now to live as the people you have created us to be, looking forward to rest with you forever. Amen.